All right. I'll call the next case this morning, Lawson v. Sun Microsystems, case 13-1502 and 15-03. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the Court. The issue in this case is, on the appeal, is essentially whether or not the 2005 employee benefit plan, the incentive compensation plan of the defendant Sun Microsystems and the predecessor employer STK, had ended by March 23rd, 2006, which is the critical date that I think the parties, based on the verdict at least, will agree is the earliest date by which the plaintiff could have been eligible to obtain incentive compensation under the plan. And what we ask the court to determine on the appeal is that if you look at these plan documents and you apply their unambiguous terms, that you have to conclude as a matter of law that the 05 plan had ended before that critical March 23rd date, such that there really was no issue for the jury in this case, and the court should have granted the Rule 50 motion, which had been filed after the jury returned for Mr. Lawson a $1.5 million verdict on this claim. And the most important piece, I think, of that unambiguous evidence that I urge you to look at is at Appendix 68, and it's Exhibit 37, and it's called the Sun Confirmation Letter. Now, you will recall that what happened was that during 2005, there was a big transition that occurred here because Mr. Lawson's initial employer at the start of the year, the so-called storage technology STK company, was acquired by Sun. And on December 26th, Mr. Lawson got a letter from Sun, which started out telling him, quote, "As of December 26, 2005, that's 4 months before that critical March 23rd date, you will transition to the Data Management Group Storage Sales Compensation Plan. That is the Sun 2006 plan." And that document is also highly important, I think, and unambiguous. Let me just add one other point here so we see the progression of the analysis. Mr. Lawson concedes in his appellate brief at page 44, quote, "Lawson does not dispute that STK and subsequently Sun had the right to terminate his employment, amend the 2005 plan, or replace it with a new plan." And then going back then to that Exhibit 37, App 68-70, what it also says is critical. It says first that this confirmation letter will supersede any prior written or oral communications to you concerning the terms of your employment with Sun. It goes on to say it supersedes any prior or oral or written communications with respect to your employment with STK, with a caveat, those that which are not documented in STK's human resource records. And it then goes on to say your employment is subject to the terms and conditions contained herein and all other relevant Sun policies.
When did that come into effect, the new plan, I guess?
The Sun plan was effective as of December 26, 2006.
Well, now, that was fully written and in place then?
No, what had happened, Your Honor, was the plan was distributed, was published. The Sun plan, the 2006 plan, was published on March 13th, 2006. So the progression of events is notice is given that the 2005 plan is ending. Mr. Lawson is told he will be getting the details of the 2006 plan. He then gets those. He receives the published plan 4 days after it was published. That is, he gets it on March the 17th, 2006. But the plan is retroactive to December 26th, and it says that explicitly, and that's totally consistent with what happened with the 2005 plan, because Mr. Lawson got the 2005 plan in March of 2005, though its effective date was January 1st of 2005, and he acknowledged it in April of 2005. So this is the way these sorts of plans work, and this was the tradition with respect to the plans in this workplace.
I'm surprised that there's so much emphasis placed on this December 26th letter instead of the amended incentive plan after the Sun merger. That specifically said that the it specifically adapted the old incentive plan to the Sun Microsystems fiscal year calendar and said that the storage tech incentive plan would be for 2005 would end on December 25th.
Well, and,
of 2005.
And we made that point, Your Honor. I was going to get there.
That seems to be the operative
and
contract.
And I think in our brief, we actually talked about that earlier. And yes, you're quite right, Your Honor. So going back then to 2005, what happened was that as I mentioned, on August the 31st, 2005, Sun acquired STK. There was issued, as of September 1st, 2005, a document. The plan consisted of three documents: the plan, the goal sheet the individual employee would get, and a document which was called, the acronym was the iPad. It was an instruction sheet, if you will. The iPad, a new iPad was issued on September 1st, and one of the things the new iPad said was that they were changing the fiscal year slightly because Sun's fiscal year ended on December 25th, Christmas Day. So they informed employees that the plan was going to end.
That was actually the end of the second quarter.
That
would have
been the
year,
end
right?
of Sun's second quarter. That's exactly right, Your Honor. And I think that it's also important, and this again is further reinforcement of the unambiguous nature of these documents. Let's look at how this 2005 plan worked. It was entirely an annual plan that was calibrated to that year. And let me just give you what I think is the best example of that. The method by which this incentive compensation was awarded was tied to the achievement of various sales goals. One category of those, and these goals were annual goals. So Mr. Lawson was given a goal for 2005. That goal included a series of customers who had equipment that was under contract as to which the employer wanted to have the contract renewed. In order to achieve the goal in part, he had to renew those customers. Now, the plaintiff's theory is that this 2005 plan somehow continued to operate despite the statements to the effect that it ended, despite the statements to the effect that it superseded. But the difficulty with that theory in this case, Your Honor, is that it doesn't coherently operate if it goes past 2005 because you have no idea what the relevant goal would be. And so if you don't know the goal, you can't begin to evaluate what the relevant compensation is that Mr. Lawson might be eligible to try to obtain.
Well, the original 2005 STK incentive plan does contain this evergreen clause.
And let me address that, Your Honor. The language that you're speaking about is is at 38. It's Exhibit 1. It's the 2005 plan. And it contains this phrase that Judge Sykes is referencing. Quote, it will remain, this is the 2005 plan, in effect until a subsequent plan or amendment to the plan becomes effective. Now, that's obviously language which the district court relied on heavily in denying relief at Rule 50, and it's the language the plaintiff relies on. But I think it does not detract from still concluding as a matter of law that this plan ended. And the first thing I think that's crucial is to look at the first sentence of the paragraph in which that sentence appears. The first paragraph says, "This plan is effective as of January 1, 2005, regardless of the specific date of publication, and supersedes all prior plans, etc." Now, what is the significance of that? It alerts Mr. Lawson to the fact that the plan, the new plan, can have an effective date which precedes the date on which he actually receives all of the details. That's what happened in 2005. And that's what happened in 2006.
Right, but we're really more concerned with the ending date, not the start date.
I agree with you.
I think the language that comes after the Evergreen Clause, or the supposed Evergreen Clause, which says all sales eligible for quota credit under this plan by the end of fiscal year 2005, which at that point was December 31st, right? Because
initially,
SDK was on calendar.
Initially, back to December 25th.
Right, but they, you know, when this was drafted, it was a calendar fiscal year, will be payable under this plan. So
correct.
That strongly suggests a calendar year termination.
It does. And then, of course, as Your Honor mentioned a moment ago, we have that overriding IPAD dated September 1st, which moves the date to December 25th, which uses the phrase that the plan year will end on December 25th. And then going to the point, and Your Honor's got your finger on it exactly, the key thing is not really when the 06 plan starts. Maybe it never started. It did, but in theory. The key point here is, when did the 05 plan end? And I take you back again, even with this language, I take you back to the fact that he's told on December 26th that he's being that this plan, all of the terms of his prior employment are being superseded by this new set of events. So that, I think, even if you thought this language had evergreen effect, it doesn't, because he's told he's superseded, and then in addition, I think you have to, this language tells him that even if he gets the terms later, that does not preclude them from having an effective date, which is retroactive, which is what happened before.
So there's nothing in effect, I guess, from either December 25th or December 31st on until this retroactive one is put in place back to 25th of December, I guess.
Well, yeah, that would be one way of looking at it, Your Honor. I mean, he's been told on December 26th he's in the new plan, but he doesn't yet have all the details of it.
New plan yet. That seems to be at least what the problem is.
Well, it's not really the problem. I mean, it's
he thinks that the thing extends until the new plan goes into place, and then conveniently is whatever the invoice was sent on, what it was, March something.
Yeah, let me get to that.
Well, I'm only saying that then the new plan is put into effect a few days later, retroactively to whatever.
That's right. But so one of two things are true, I think. I think the answer is that he gets the benefit of the retroactive date, just as he got the benefit of the retroactive date in 2005 when he collected $38,000.
He doesn't see that as a benefit.
No, I understand that, Your Honor. But let me reframe the way I stated it.
Okay.
That there was a contractual commitment that could be enforced at that point as to that plan, and the same point then applies as to the 06 plan. And as you know from stipulated fact 77, he does not claim the $54,300 that he was offered in compensation under the 06 plan. So I don't think the gap period is an issue with respect to the end of the 05 plan. And the other thing I think that's important about the gap period is, if there is no plan, then again, that is a prerogative that the employer has. The plaintiff admits he was an at-will employee. He admits at page 44 of his brief that Sun had the ability to change the plan at any time, and it could end a plan. And then the other thing, going to this issue about the disclosure of the terms, we've drawn the court's attention to two Indiana cases, the Alfaro case being the more recent, and it cites an older case called Orton and Steinbrenner. And both of these cases recognize that in a bonus-type compensation scenario or severance pay scenario, that if the employer makes an offer of some sort of reward, even though the terms are not disclosed, that is an enforceable promise, and a contract can be formed in those circumstances, even though all of the terms are not yet there. And that's this kind of a situation. He gets a letter on December 26th that tells him, all right, we're going to do just what we did last year. I'm going to have a plan. I'm not going to have all the details yet. It will be made retroactively effective, and I will continue to work. And, of course, as an at-will employee, the manner of acceptance is not necessarily that you agree to the terms, as the Indiana Wheeler case says, where the employee objected to terms. The manner of acceptance is that you continue to perform the job under the conditions the terms stated. And if the employer hasn't disclosed them all to you yet but has made you aware of this opportunity, that it's an enforceable contract. And, indeed, a contrary rule, if you were to decide that, would actually be to the great disadvantage of employees, because employers could try to deprive them of promises which aren't yet fully fleshed out, but which would confer upon them important benefits that induce them to work.
If this thing had been invoiced, before December 26th or whatever that cutoff date is, would he have been eligible for the $1.5 million commission?
Well, Your Honor, that was a debated issue, a trial with respect to the exercise of the discretion that the employer had. The employer had discretion to reduce the amount of any compensation based upon the profitability of the work, the fact that other people had to be rewarded for it, and here there were many people who worked on this chase opportunity, and of course the amount is astronomical in relation to what he had earned before.
Well, that's why I asked the question: Is it possible? Because it was perplexing me how someone would be eligible for that as the sole person who landed that big contract. Well, usually that takes a lot of other input from other people and that sort of thing. That's why I ask if it had been invoiced, because that seems to be the land where it's marked is the fulfillment, then I just wonder if he would have been eligible for that, because he's trying to extend that on to before the new plan was implemented.
His eligibility would have been subject to the employer discretion to reduce it because the profitability was less.
So they could have, the $1.5 million, is that hypothetical?
Totally hypothetical. I mean, his projected bonus for 2005 was $80,000.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, this is leagues ahead of that. And then let me just also, there's a very important document you should think about here. It's Trial Exhibit 361. And what it does is it shows you what people were paid who worked on this deal in 2006. There was $278,000 paid. Mr. Lawson was offered $54,300. He would have been the second highest compensated person on the deal, but what he's asking for is an award which is, you know, what, 7 or 8 times the total amount that was compensated. And recall, the nature of this opportunity totally changed when Sun acquired STK, because for STK, Chase was a whole new client opportunity. For Sun, it was an existing client. And so under the STK world, the compensation you got was primarily for getting new business and assigned renewal opportunities. So the whole complexion of the opportunity changed from a business point of view. And indeed, we don't try to detract from Mr. Lawson's contribution, but, you know, the opportunity to get the business would have enormously changed given Sun was already doing the business once he joined Sun.
What are the mechanics of payment on these commissions?
The way the process works, Your Honor, is that the payment is the whole thing is toted up at the end of the year, and then there's a draw opportunity, and you saw reference to that in the record. And he took a draw in March of 2006 in anticipation of what he thought he would be earning. He kept that. That was $17,000. So the toting up process actually occurs at the end, and that becomes relevant, among other things, on the statutory wage issue. And I don't know if you'd like me to anticipate that now or wait and let Mr. Penninger speak to it first.
Probably. You've got 20 minutes. You're not. Oh, you are approaching your rebuttal time. You're not quite there yet. So it's up to you.
Should I anticipate the cross appeal?
Go ahead. You've got a few minutes before you're.
So on the cross appeal, this is the question about whether the district court correctly concluded this is not a wage under Indiana's wage claim statute. I think here this is an eerie question. The Indiana courts and this court's decision 3 years ago now in the Thomas case really lay out the criteria that you use for determining that question. Now, the plaintiff says that the wage claim statute has a very broad definition of wage. That definition has broadness to it, but it has to be strictly construed. And most importantly, the Indiana Supreme Court in the High House case, this court in Thomas, all have said This definition is also relevant under the wage payment statute, which is a little different because that applies to people who resign rather than are fired and for people who remain working. And there's a four-factor test that you apply. And the four factors were applied here by the district court. I think the most important of them, and they all cut in favor of the conclusion that this was not a wage. The most important of them goes to the point Judge Mannion was making with me in discussion, which is that there is terrific discretion with respect to payments. So that disqualifies you as a wage under all that case law. And then you have the fact this guy was getting a $75,000 a year salary, whatever compensation he would get. That is pivotal in the Indiana cases, as well as the fact, speaking to Judge Sykes' point, that it tends not to be viewed as a wage if it's not paid periodically, and here you have an end of the year toting up process with a draw opportunity. So I think at this point I perhaps should reserve what I have left.
That's
thank
fine.
You.
Thank you, Mr. Pinnegar.
Good morning. The parties had a contract, and it stated explicitly that it would remain in effect until a subsequent plan became effective. The jury had to decide when did the subsequent plan become effective. And Mr. Peterson has brought before you a number of arguments based on extrinsic evidence. He's construing that evidence in his favor against the explicit standard of review. And there's, in fact, some extrinsic evidence he hasn't mentioned at all. The critical date, as a matter of fact, that the jury had was April 4, 2006. That date is important. It's after March 23, 2006, so clearly Lawson's commission rights have accrued. That's undisputed before this court. On April 4, 2006, Sun provides Lawson his goal sheet for the 2006 contract. That's probably the most important document for the incentive contract because it tells the employee what his goal is. And this document that Sun drafted, Sun includes this statement, the plan, and it's the 2006 plan that's defined, is not effective until this goal sheet has been completed and approved at all levels, including finance. So the jury had to decide, well, when, if ever, was this goal sheet completed and approved? It had to look at that language in light of completely conflicting language that Sun relies on, that the other plan document said, well, we're going to make it effective another date. That's a contradiction in the 2006 plan documents. The jury, as the finder of fact, had to say, well, we have to resolve that. We're going to look at this goal sheet, the most important document. There's no evidence, none. Sun has brought no evidence that that goal sheet, in fact, was ever completed. And certainly when it was presented to Lawson, it hadn't been completed by Sun. Lawson didn't sign it. And by that date, we're past March 23. The commission rights under the 05 contract have accrued. Per its explicit language, it will remain in effect until a subsequent plan
becomes effective. That's an important threshold question here that you're kind of skipping over in getting to the issue of the effective date of the 2006 plan, which is the question of when the 2005 plan expired and the meaning of this remain in effect right. language and whether it's enforceable as an evergreen clause based on the rest of the text of that same provision and, in particular, the text of the superseding IPAD, I guess, to use your or the company's acronym, which specifically says that the 2005 incentive plan terminates on December 25th.
It does not state that.
It does say that.
No, I believe it does not.
I'm looking right at it. It says, will end on December 25th, 2005.
Are you looking at Sun's brief?
I'm looking at the document, the plan.
Okay.
The incentive plan administration document dated 9/1/05.
I believe the statement is that the fiscal year will end on that date. But there is no statement in the plan.
The current incentive plan year.
Right.
So that's what we're talking about. When does the incentive plan year end? And it ends on December 25th. So that supersedes this earlier document that contains the potential evergreen language, but also specifically says that only sales eligible during the fiscal year 2005 will be payable under this plan.
And respectfully, I think much as Sun has done in its brief, it's taking the end of the fiscal year and, to use its own word from its reply brief, superimposing that and saying that's equivalent to the incentive contract itself just ending.
Well, because the contract itself makes it equivalent. The plan year ends when the fiscal year ends. So
the year is not equivalent to the contract. At the very end of the document, you have that evergreen clause that says everything else notwithstanding, we have
right, but most evergreen clause in the collective bargaining context, for example, an enforceable evergreen clause will contain this language: the plan will remain in effect. But then it usually says, notwithstanding the expiration date stated herein, or words to that effect. I mean, that's typically what you see in a collective bargaining agreement evergreen clause if the parties have bargained for that gap continuation until a new collective bargaining agreement is inked and made retroactive to the end of the plan, the previous CBA. That's how it works in that context. Language is not found here. It doesn't say notwithstanding the termination of the plan year.
No, and in fact, this is a document Sun drafted. It provides it to Lawson as a contract. It's clearly
actually
a contract.
The first one is drafted by STK, the
right.
One that contains the evergreen language.
And it says this will remain in effect until a subsequent plan becomes effective. And
but it also says that all sales eligible for a quota credit under this plan mm-hmm. by the end of the fiscal year 2005 will be payable. That seems to override and suggest a different interpretation of the evergreen language. Not that it fills post-expiration gaps, but that it means that the plan can be amended and within the fiscal year, the plan year, and any amendments will supersede.
And I don't believe, I mean, respectfully, the contract that Sun drafted contains no termination date. It simply says it remains in effect. The language that you're citing, I agree, if something occurs in the 05, it's payable within this plan. But it never says if it invoices after the end of the fiscal year, it simply ipso facto can't be paid under this plan because the plan will remain in effect. And there's other, that goal sheet is critical because the goal sheet shows Sun is saying, well, in this document, it's going to remain in effect potentially forever, as Mr. Peterson acknowledged. And then in April 6th, they give him the subsequent plan document for the next year and says, but this plan isn't effective until this form's completed.
Right. That gets to the start date of the 2006 plan.
Right.
I'm still focusing on the termination date of the 2005 plan. And if that plan terminated, then he doesn't get recovery, and this case should have been kicked on summary judgment.
And it doesn't terminate. That language, I believe...
We have to read that language in the context of the whole paragraph, not in isolation. And it seems to me that you and the district court read it in isolation and gave it evergreen effect without reading it with what comes before and what comes after, and then specifically without reading it in the context of the superseding iPad that Sun issued on September 1st that makes it explicit that the plan year ends on December 25th, and you can't get...
And I don't think the plan year, respectfully, I don't think the plan year is equivalent to the contract itself. It was clear that Mr. Lawson was an incentive...
They're referring to the same thing.
I don't believe so.
So the plan year is the basis upon which the compensation is determined, but the plan continues, and theory would be that you get new goals for the new year, but if they haven't changed the same plan is in effect.
Right. It was critical, as Mr. Lawson, he was an incentive-based employee. It's critical to both employer and employee to have an incentive contract in place at all times, which is why you would have that language.
Back to the evergreen clause, though. It doesn't just say it will remain in effect until a subsequent plan becomes effective. It also says, or amendment to the plan.
Right.
How about the letter that of December 26th that Mr. Peterson emphasized earlier?
That letter, again, is a piece of extrinsic evidence to the contract itself.
Wait a minute. Extrinsic to the contract, but this contract by its terms says it can be changed at any time by the company. And aren't they doing that in December 26 telling you that you're transitioning to a new plan, isn't that an amendment that your client acknowledged, continued working as an at-will employee, and therefore is bound by the amendment to the plan?
I don't believe so, because for a couple reasons. That letter, first of all, it says you transition on this date of this plan. Sun admitted at trial that on that date, it itself had no idea what the plan was going to say.
That's the whole point that Mr. Peterson was making. The whole manner in which these were done is that you agree there'll be a new plan. They haven't worked out the terms here, but they make it retroactive. It's very bizarre to anybody outside of this business that you do all the work and find out what the recipe is for your payment later. But that's what you seem to have agreed to. Your client has seemed to agree to, and that seems to have been the practice here.
Well, Mr. Peterson's argument, there's a few things here, is assuming you can have a contract with no terms. And as a matter of contract law, you can't do that. Moreover, Mr. Lawson...
So is the whole contract illusory?
That was Sun's position the entire time until today and in the briefs. They contended this was just an illusory promise. Contract said no, or the court said this is a contract, and they have not brought that issue before this court.
Yeah.
Mr. Lawson signed the letter. If you look at the signature block, it merely acknowledges I received the letter. And as the district court pointed out, his signature couldn't signify he agreed to the subsequent plan because nobody knew at that date what it said. There was no plan in existence. And it wasn't until April, that Sun gets around to giving him a goal sheet that says this plan isn't effective.
But they had done that the previous year in the 2005 plan too, right?
STK, a prior employer, had. And there's a couple distinctions here. It's a different employer. But more importantly, when STK provided the 05 quota sheet, it did not have that similar language. The 2006 goal sheet was different. It had that this plan is not effective. And when you look at that language and go back to the evergreen, they mesh. This plan is effect until a subsequent plan becomes effective. On April 4, he gets the document that says, now, when we complete this form, the 2006 plan becomes effective. The jury looked at that and could use that as a basis to find 2005 plan must be still in effect. And Mr. Peterson referenced the draw. That's a very important piece of evidence. Mr. Lawson received this draw on March 17, 2006. We're clearly now into 2006. It gives him, when it issues him the draw, it gives him the payment form. It refers to the 2005 contract. It says, it gives him his 2005 job title. And it says, if you have further questions, if you need more details, refer to a 2005 plan document. So we're into March now, March 17. He gets this document that says, go back to the 2005 contract. Clearly, that is evidence which the jury could infer, well, if it's paying a draw, under the 2005 contract documents, the contract must still be in effect, consistent with its language.
There is no dispute here, am I correct, that if the 2005 plan is in effect, your client was entitled to $1.5 million, with the jury award?
I don't believe there's any dispute.
That's not an issue in the case.
No, and the question was posed, and that seems like a lot of money. It's based on calculations that are in the contract Sun drafted and provided him, and it's based on stipulated evidence. Mr. Lawson at trial took that stipulated evidence, plugged it into the formula, and that's the commission.
Was the sale eligible for a commission by the end of fiscal year 2005?
No, it did not invoice.
Then
by
it
that
isn't
date.
Payable under the 2005 plan, even if it did have continued effect after its expiration.
The contract
language says
the contract doesn't address. There's an ambiguity there. That is really not brought before you by Sun. There's an ambiguity there because it says remains in effect, and then on the first page it says you have to invoice and have a binding agreement with the customer. So there's an ambiguity here. Well, if you have the invoice and the 2005 plan is still in effect because, as the jury found, it hasn't been subsequently replaced, that was an ambiguity.
It says that the sales that are eligible are those that are that satisfy all the criteria for payment by the end of fiscal year 2005. Those are the ones
right.
That are payable under the 2005 plan.
But
so if it's stipulated that this wasn't eligible,
It doesn't foreclose the possibility that something can be paid past 05.
Well, right. The company can, as a matter of grace, I suppose, pay something if it wants to. But under the terms of the plan and the actual amendment to it and all of the documents construed as a whole, it seems to make clear that you've got to satisfy all criteria for compensation by the end of fiscal year 2005, regardless of this evergreen language. Well, the evergreen language may keep the payment terms alive for some undetermined period. That's not clear. But if you don't get paid unless all conditions are satisfied within the fiscal year, then you roll over until the next year.
Well, I think the contract, and we may just have to agree to disagree, Judge. Contract, by saying it remains in effect, I think that trumps everything by saying we have to have an incentive plan in place. And if we get to the end of the fiscal year, and because of a very complicated acquisition, we don't get around until well into the next year, this one's going to remain in effect so that you, Mr. Lawson, stay incentivized.
The so-called evergreen language is not anticipatory of a merger, right? This is based on a past course of conduct, apparently. I don't know.
Sun drafted it and gave it to him and said, we're going to give you a plan, and Mr. Lawson, because we want you to be incentivized, it's going to remain in effect indefinitely. And no, it didn't contemplate specifically a merger, but it contemplates no termination date.
The Sun Amendment doesn't have the evergreen language in it.
No, and the Sun Amendment actually has a page dedicated to the merger. And in that page, it doesn't say your plan's now going to end or your contract's going to end. It maintained that language, and the plan administrator admitted, I can't change that language without telling Mr. Lawson, and he admitted he never told Mr. Lawson that. So the evergreen trumps. It stays in effect. There's other evidence. In fact, March, this is before the transaction. In March 2006, Sun Management realizes this deal is going to close. We have to pay Mr. Lawson. If you look at those email communications where they're discussing this, Mr. Lawson's boss, Paul Heidkamp, emails his boss, Tom Kelly, and says, the plan is not officially out yet. That's a direct quote. And he says, we're going to give Mr. Lawson a draw to, quote, buy more time. There's follow-up emails where the incentive plan, not the administrator, Mr. Schlager, who helps with the incentive plans, he chimes in and says, I don't know how we're going to do this because at this point in time, I don't know which incentive contract applies. The obvious inference being, until we have an invoice, we don't know if that's going to come before or after the new plan comes into existence. So you have contemporaneous emails from Sun Management acknowledging we don't know yet which plan's going to apply because we don't know the invoice date. And this is 3 months into 2006.
The Sun plan, though, does indicate it's retroactive to December 26th of 2005.
In one section. In another section, it says, no, this plan's not effective until this form's
complete. So it's not effective until it's approved, but once it's approved, then it's retroactive. Isn't that the way you read that? Isn't that the only reason?
No, I think the jury, remember, these are documents extrinsic to the contract. The jury can look at all this and look at the evidence I just cited with the draw payment form, the contemporaneous email communications, and look at that and say, well, until this goal sheet's approved, you don't have anything becoming effective. And per the language in the evergreen, the 2005 contract is still therefore in existence.
Can I turn to the wage issue?
Briefly, I want to address the Alfaro case Mr. Peterson mentioned, because it's distinguishable. It's essentially the opposite situation. And in that case, the courts considered a situation where an employee was hired. He was not told the terms of a bonus program. He was verbally induced, the court found, on the bonus program, but he wasn't provided it. And then later he sued to enforce those terms. Here Sun is trying to enforce terms on Lawson that not even Sun knew. This isn't Lawson saying, you hid terms for me. Sun didn't know the terms. It's the opposite of that case.
But he knew his employment, which was at will, was contingent upon this new plan, being drafted and made retroactive to December 26th. And he was working day-to-day on that representation.
I think he had a contract. And you can have it at-will employment subject to an express contract. He had a contract. Sun drafted, provided him, remain in effect. He relied on that language.
Right. It has to be interpreted as a whole, though, in the context of all of its amendments. And the December 26th letter put him clearly on notice that he was going to be moved, effective that date, to a new plan, the terms of which had not yet been developed, and it would be made retroactive to that date. So he couldn't reasonably rely on the old plan, certainly not from that point.
And I would just respectfully submit the jury found otherwise. But I understand we agree to disagree, perhaps. On the wage claim, there's a definition. The court is bound by that definition. That's clear Indiana law. The case law factors Mr. Peterson cited and relied on, they're brought under a different statute altogether.
Doesn't the Indiana Supreme Court read that statute in peri materiae with the one that applies here?
No, I don't believe so. There are the cases Mr. Peterson referenced, including one from this court, brought under the payment statute case, the separate statute, and the court will reference the definition and then just move straight to case law factors. It never returns to the definition, and that makes sense because the definition doesn't apply to the other statute. So we have a definition, and Sun nor the district court paid much attention to it, contrary to Indiana law. Sun, in fact, has only identified one case where a court in the claim statute, which Mr. Lawson sues under, looked to the definition. And that's a case, it's an unpublished motion to dismiss entry entered by the same district judge who presided over this case. Essentially, Sun is citing Judge Young 2 months prior. And that's the only case that Sun has brought before you where the definition, or the case law factors were applied to Mr. Lawson's claim. And I see my time has expired.
Thank you. Mr. Peterson, you've got 1 minute, although I did encourage you to cut into your rebuttal time. So.
Perhaps I should ask if the court has any questions at this point. If not, I'll just cover a couple of quick points. It's pointed out to you that the goal sheet said that this isn't effective until it's approved at all levels. I think this goes to Your Honor's question, which is, all right, maybe there has to be a point at which it has to go through the internal approval process, but it has a retroactive effective date as the either earlier plan had. And again, the critical question in this case is when the 05 plan ends, not when the 06 plan takes effect. And I think that becomes clear that that plan ended based upon that December 26 letter. It ended based upon the provisions in the September IPAD that changed the fiscal year and said this plan year is going to end. It changed with respect to the provisions requiring that the claim had to be made within 30 years of the end of the fiscal year. With respect to this notion that somehow you couldn't have a contract if the terms were unknown, that is not what the Alfaro case has said. I was going to read it to you, but I see my light is on, and so perhaps I should just ask if the court has any more questions.
I think not. Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.